lectures, and then I will ask some questions. So what I plan to do in these lectures is to explain the current paradigm of early universe cosmology, namely the inflationary universe scenario. And probably a lot of you, maybe not the students, but a lot of those of you who are not students have heard talks about the inflationary universe scenario. And I think my talk or my lectures are going to have a rather different focus, because instead of focusing on the phenomenological success of inflationary cosmology, what I would like to highlight is the conceptual problems. Because I think that if I would paraphrase the current paradigm of early universe cosmology in a couple of sentences, I would say that inflationary cosmology is a spectacularly successful phenomenological paradigm in search of an underlying theory. And I think that the underlying theory will come from new fundamental physics. And this is where the Perimeter Institute fits in. Now, I don't know what this new fundamental physics is going to be, but I hope to provoke some discussions and debate in these lectures. So, anyway, so first of all, the question that I have, how many of you are graduate students? Or students in general? Okay, great. So now, those of you who are students, your job is going to be to interrupt me whenever I say something which you do not have the background to understand. Because I think that cosmology should, at the level that I'm going to present it, the basis of such cosmology is rather self-contained. And you should be able to follow at least the main discussion, even if you don't have, if you haven't taken a graduate class on general relativity, even if you haven't taken field theory, even if you don't know what string theory is. So I'll try to make things self-contained. So now I guess the question is, how long is your stamina? So the lectures were announced as stamina without caffeine. So since today has been a really busy day for many people, for those of you who are not students, I don't know about the students. Students probably have more stamina than the older people. I could go for 2 hours, but maybe we should say 1.5 hours. Does that sound reasonable? Okay. I would prefer not to have a break, actually. Because I think the break would disrupt the...
Can we ask questions?
Yes, please. Because it's always up to me to say that the questions are inappropriate. Remember, there are no dumb questions, only dumb answers. So, anyway, so I wrote down the things that I would like to cover. I would like to introduce the inflationary universe, the current paradigm of our theory of the universe. And then, not today, but in the next lecture, I would like to discuss the theory of cosmological perturbations. Now here I use the word theory. Even though we don't have a paradigm, cosmological perturbation theory is a good theory, and it is the vehicle that you will need to connect any paradigm of the early universe with the data. So this topic of the theory of cosmological perturbations is absolutely central to modern cosmology. And whatever comes after that is open to discussion, so I could discuss elements of string cosmology. Now, the background for today's class or lecture is in this review article entitled Inflationary Cosmology, Progress and Problems.
So, I already have a question, which is, all right, so you're going to discuss other aspects of cosmology, open questions like, you know, dark matter, dark energy?
Only in as far as they arise.
Okay.
So, no, I will not, the focus is going to be on the question whether we really understand the early universe. So, a year and a half ago, after some, maybe, was it, yeah, I think a year and a half ago, a preprint came out. I won't name the author, and the title was Cosmology Solved. So we understand the history of the early universe. But the main point of my lecture is going to be that nothing could be further from the truth. That we've learned a lot, but the more we learn, the more interesting open questions emerge. And obviously dark matter, dark energy is one of these open issues.
I ask mostly because it's not at all, I mean, in the standard inflationary paradigm, these are three separate things, but it seems to me when you start to look at alternative theories, they could be connected in ways that are pretty important.
Yes. But I will start by the paradigm in which the dark energy arises as a complete mystery. So, then if I feel it, then. So I will be moving this away, but I do have a couple of data slides which I want to show. Okay, so the first topic is going to be the inflationary universe scenario. And what I want to discuss here is I will start out with the standard Big Bang cosmology, just to establish common language. I will discuss the problems of the standard Big Bang, some of which inflationary cosmology claims to solve. So I'll describe the geometrical idea of inflation as opposed to a model of inflation, and then I will talk about realizations of inflation. Then I'll talk about ending inflation. And then I will talk about problems of inflation. I will also discuss, I'll give an overview of fluctuations, the mechanism for forming fluctuations. And for those of you who have already been to too many talks today and who fall asleep, let me just give you the main message that I want to bring across. Many of you have heard about the severe conceptual problems of standard Big Bang cosmology, which inflation is facing. So some of these problems of standard Big Bang cosmology are actually connected with the greatest success of standard Big Bang cosmology, namely the prediction of the spectrum and black body nature of the microwave background. So standard Big Bang cosmology, the old paradigm, had an incredible success, namely the prediction of the black body nature of the cosmic microwave background. We couldn't understand its isotropy. The biggest success of inflationary cosmology is that it provides a mechanism to generate fluctuations. But the bottom line is that in this successful mechanism of generating fluctuations lurks a severe conceptual problem of similar nature as the severe conceptual problem that was in standard Big Bang cosmology. And it is up to those of you working here at the Institute to find a solution of that cosmic problem. So this is sort of the structure of the topic. So I'll start out with standard Big Bang cosmology. So standard Big Bang cosmology is based on three pillars. The first pillar is the assumption that the universe is homogeneous and isotropic. The second pillar is Einstein's theory of curved space-time. Matter curves space-time. What is matter? And the third pillar is that matter is a set of perfect fluids. So a classical description of matter, a classical description of space-time, and an assumption of simplicity and the homogeneity in SRT. Now, I'll hide this for a second. This principle of simplicity was originally absolutely not supported by any observational data, but now it is supported by superb observational data, namely by the isotropy of the cosmic microwave background. So this is a projection of the sky onto a plane. And it's not that it's a wrong transparency here, but this is indeed the temperature map of the microwave background. If you look with less resolution than one part in 10 to the 4, then you see a completely uniform temperature. So this is the support of this principle of simplicity. So based on that, you can write the metric of space-time.
Can I ask you, that supports isotropy. Homogeneity is an assumption.
Isotropy plus the assumption that we are not at a special place gives homogeneity.
Yeah.
So some element of the...
I'm willing to believe that.
Okay. But, so therefore, we can write the metric in this form. Three-dimensional space, time. This is physical time. These are so-called co-moving coordinates. So if you imagine for the moment that the universe, that space is the surface of a balloon, then these coordinates x are coordinates which are painted onto the surface of the balloon. And as the balloon expands in time, the physical distance between these points is increasing. And this scale factor describes the expansion of the universe. And the expansion rate is given by A dot over A, and it is called the Hubble constant, but it is actually not constant in time. So, implementation of homogeneity isotropy. So, now, the Einstein equations, nonlinear, complicated nonlinear equations, if you apply them to this simple homogeneous and isotropic metric, you get very simple equations of motion. So the Einstein equations with this for this geometry.
So are you going to use them in spatial flatness throughout?
For simplicity, not here. I've assumed spatial flatness because I just write this as the metric on three-dimensional Euclidean space, but at one point I will include spatial curvature, and it's actually in discussing the problems of the study.
So what did you write? This scale factor, is that absolute value of t?
No, it's not.
H of t, the Hubble parameter.
A of t, right?
A of t. Some people write it R of t.
Just a
So the Einstein equations applied to this metric give you the so-called Friedman-Robertson-Markov-Lumet equations. The first equation is this Hubble expansion rate is given by the energy density in the universe, which is rho. Rho is the energy density. G is Newton's constant. And the second equation is rho dot is equal to minus 3h rho plus p. P is the pressure. So this ideal, this perfect fluid, is described by energy density and by pressure. And these are the equations of standard Rydberg Bakken's modeling. For a moment, I'll put this, I'll move this.
Yeah,
I'll see.
Are you going to use the Cauchy constant?
Yes.
This will come. And finally, to complete standard Big Bang cosmology, I need to say something about the matter that's usually assumed. And the matter is cold matter plus radiation. So in standard Big Bang cosmology, those are the two components of matter. Now radiation, this is the classic microwave background radiation. It has an equation of state. Pressure equals 1/3 energy density. And cold matter, what in North America is just called matter, has an equation of state. Pressure equals 0.
Maybe you should explain it. The term equation of state means the equation that relates pressure to energy.
Okay, that will come in. I'll write that down later.
So cold matter is exotic matter. Cold matter is exotic matter.
Cold matter?
It's
stone?
Cold dark matter.
Now this cold matter, you can view that as just stones which are widely separated.
Dust.
Anything with no pressure, which is pressureless. So now what we do is we take these equations, we work backwards in time from the present time, T0 is the present time, and today we can measure the density in matter by measuring the mass in each galaxy, counting up the number of galaxies, and measuring the temperature of the cosmic microwave background, we can infer the energy density in the microwave background, and we find that today the energy density of the universe is dominated by matter. Radiation is way subdominant. However, from this equation, it follows that the energy density in radiation increases faster as you go backwards in time than the energy density in cold matter. Because cold matter P is 0. So therefore, if you trace these curves back into the past, they will cross at some time. And this time has a very boring name, namely the time of equal matter and radiation. So, yeah, I'm talking energy densities and the same time. And if you go back, if you follow these equations back, you actually find that there is a time where these energy densities blow up, and we call this time q is equal to 0. So there's a singularity in the energy density function.
are you planning to give some intuition of to why it is that the radiation starts to dominate as we go back in time?
Yeah, okay, I can do it, since you ask. Yeah. So, if you take radiation, so you fixed number of photons per expanding volume element. But as the universe expands, each photon loses energy because of the redshift, whereas each matter particle keeps its same rest energy. So that explains why the energy density in radiation decreases faster as you go forward in terms of energy density in matter. Now, if we are talking about this, let's look at the total energy density in the universe in photons. The total energy in photons in the universe, in standard Big Bang cosmology. The total energy in photons is not conserved. Energy is not conserved. Matter energy is not conserved. And that's not an artifact of inflationary cosmology. In standard Big Bang cosmology, today, we are losing matter energy as we speak. And you should not be surprised, because we don't have time translation variance, therefore we don't have energy conservation. So if someone doesn't understand, if someone objects to inflation on the basis of energy non-conservation, there's absolutely no reason to do that. Okay, so that's the standard Big Bang cosmology. Let's briefly mention the successes of standard Big Bang cosmology. Well, the first success is that it postdated Hubble's law. So if you picture the universe as an expanding raisin bread, then each galaxy thinks that it is in the center of the universe, and each galaxy sees the neighboring galaxy receding from it. The more distant the galaxy is, the faster the apparent velocity. Nothing is moving. Also, in standard Big Bang cosmology, if you go far enough away, you'll find that the apparent recession velocity is greater than the speed of light. So recession velocity is greater than the speed of light, occurring in standard Big Bang cosmology, not an artifact of inflation. So that's first success. The second success is the prediction of the black body nature of the cosmic matter black body. So this is a prediction which was made independently in the West by Alpha Hermann and Gamow, and it was also made in the former Soviet Union by Zeldovich. Now, it was interpreted in rather different ways. So Zeldovich said that since standard Big Bang cosmology predicts this black body microwave background, this theory of the expanding universe obviously has to be wrong, because there is no cosmic microwave background. We have a cold universe, cold beginning. Whereas Alpha, Hermann, and Gamow, they said this, they interpreted this as a prediction, which one should look for, although they were, no one paid attention.
Does that mean Zeldovich had too high a temperature for it?
No, he just
he
just liked the cold universe. So the lesson that I want to come back to that later on. So the hot Big Bang model, the idea that the universe started out hot, was not always in favor. That it might end up not being right. You might find eventually that the conceptual problems of inflationary cosmology force you to abandon the idea that the universe started out hot. The hot stage might have been an intermediate stage.
So you're saying, for example, Dawkins, it was just a conflict between his prejudice and the prediction, and he kept his prejudice. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, here's the plot of the black bond, of the microwave background. It's an observational plot. So intensity as a function of wavelength. This is the observational curve. And all of you know that this curve looks exactly like a black bond curve.
Are there some error bars in
mm-hmm. Yeah, the error bars are actually smaller than the width. I ask him to ask his question.
That's very friends of
right.
Can I ask a question? So, the thing that you just said about the lack of positive universe, if I have a positive universe, then there's a horizon. So, the total energy is radiation plus matter. We should. Total energy should equal zero.
The total matter energy? Or you include gravitational energy?
Yeah.
I was...
I, when I mean positive energy, I mean everything.
Right. How do you define total energy? I don't want...
I mean, he was talking about just the...
I was talking about matter energy.
Okay, you're not
so, obviously the...
You have to include gravitational energy.
That's right. So you can always say that the matter energy which is being lost from radiation goes into gravity.
Right.
However, how do you make that rigorous?
Well,
that's not a question to discuss now.
I don't, it's just to get an impression that we're violating the conservation of energy. We're not.
We are that. Matter energy is not conserved.
Well, total energy.
So can you have these energy densities diverging in the past without having a conflict?
No, because if rho sub r, that diverges, that means that the temperature is diverging. That is, by definition,
okay.
The Big Bang, the hot Big Bang.
So the Lovitch didn't see that curve? Or?
No, he didn't believe that that was the truth.
Okay.
Did he believe in Stefan Boltzmann?
Actually, I must confess that I've not dug up his article. So, now the third success of standard Big Bang cosmology is Big Bang nuclear synthesis. But I'm not going to talk about it at all. So, I should mention why there is a black body microwave background. So if you work forwards from the hot initial state, you have thermal equilibrium, maybe not at the beginning, but long before you come out in radiation. There was a time which corresponds to a temperature corresponding to the binding energy of hydrogen, before which the universe was in plasma, after which the universe is neutral. So the black body microwave background is the thermal photons which have traveled to us without scattering from this time to today. So when we are looking at the microwave background, we're actually looking back at how the universe looked at this time, which corresponded to about 100,000 years after the Big Bang.
It's really a logarithmic time scale here.
It's not only logarithmic, it's impressionistic.
How does that time scale relate to the time scale of the crossover?
Okay, good. It's actually the way that I indicated it. Recombination is slightly later than diffraction radiation. It didn't have to be the case. This depends on the parameters. It depends on the ratio of the energy density radiation today and the energy density matter today. Depends on the value of the cosmological constant as well. But they're not on a logarithmic time scale, they're not too separated. So if you plot time in terms of redshift, where the redshift at time t is defined by the scale factor today divided by the scale factor at time t minus 1, then you find that this corresponds to a redshift of about z equals 10 to the 3, and this corresponds to a redshift of about 10 to the 4.
So, avoid recombination is really an oxymoron.
Yeah.
Combination?
Recombination. It's an oxymoron.
Yeah. I know. I'm very bad at inventing new names.
The temperature of ice we are talking a few thousand Kelvin, yeah?
Four, but recombination is about 4,000 Kelvin.
Yeah.
Which falls immediately from the fact that the temperature might go back on today's 3 degrees. Okay. Problems of the standard deep blank
model. Can I ask one more question, please? You assumed at the outset that the theory assumes the isotropy, right? And
yes.
So what you're really saying is that the theory is giving you the fact that it's thermal. Where does the theory give you that the radiation is thermal?
Okay, in any direction, the radiation is predicted to be thermal. Now, I haven't said anything about how the temperatures at different directions, how they will compare, and I'm getting to that now. So.
Okay,
thanks for asking the question. It's directly what I wanted to address now.
But even to be thermal in a small region, I mean, why is it? I mean, that's because there's some story about the distant past in the local region. There's some interactions.
But how big is that region? That's what I'm going to get to now. So, you see, I think, hopefully I've convinced you that this black body nature of the microwave background is the biggest success of standard deep band cosmology. So now, we'll come to the problems. And the first problem is the homogeneity problem. So I'll draw a space-time diagram. Time running up. Space. This is physical distance. And this time here is the time of recombination, when the photons last scatter. We are here, this is today, looking in opposite directions in the sky, looking at the photons which are arriving in these different directions. We see, as I showed you in the first transparency that I had, that the temperature to better than 1 part in 10 to the 4 is the same here and here. So now, in standard Big Bang cosmology, there is T equals 0, the Big Bang, temperature is infinite, and you can calculate how far light could have traveled from one point in space at t equals 0. Forward light cone at t recombination, past light cone at t recombination. So, and what you find, and I'll give this as a homework problem to students, is you find that, as I indicated in this graph, the forward light cone at t recombination is much, much smaller than the past light cone. And that we're talking about a factor of 100. So therefore, using causal physics, there is no way to explain why the temperature here and here is the same. In a small patch of this size, you can explain what.
Just ask, I mean, this is a standard argument, right? But there are people who object to say that, look, to calculate the size of that causal horizon distance light can go, You have to assume that you know how the scale factor
yes.
varies with time,
that's
all the way back
that's right.
to literally t equals zero.
That's right.
And that if the well, but the thing is, if the time dependence of the scale factor is different, even in a very tiny interval,
right.
epsilon, after zero,
that's right.
you don't know what the size
that's
of the
right.
horizon is.
And that's
so,
exactly the idea of how inflation solves the problem.
You could say that, but you could also say that. I mean, there are people, and I sort of tend to sympathize with this, to say that isn't it an artificial problem? Because no one would believe that those equations are valid literally
right.
down to t is zero.
That's going to be also
right.
one of the problems that I mentioned. Yep.
But what's
right.
your view? I mean,
okay, so you are absolutely right. Inflation is one way to solve the homogeneity problem by modifying how the scale factor evolved very early on, but it may not be the only way.
Right, but
and
well,
it
okay,
is
but
not the only
but
way.
What I'm trying to say is, it seems to me there's a reasonable view that says, look, there is no problem. Because, look, no one would believe these classical Friedman equations down to, you know, arbitrarily before the Planck
okay.
time, so literally zero.
Right. But that, you know, that's a bit,
kind of,
that's words, because You may say that there's no problem, but I want an explanation.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, you're not really saying that there's no problem. You're just saying that, well, there's another thing for the Planck error to solve.
You could be
right. Right, I mean, so you have to then make a list of things
right.
that you want the Planck error to do for you.
Well, okay, I don't know, but look, the problem wouldn't exist if you didn't assume that those equations are valid below the Planck time.
See, but you need some new equations.
Yeah.
Fine.
So. We want an explanation.
It's a bit of a tricky issue to me. But
so okay. the problem really involves extrapolating all the way back. No.
If the whole universe is supposed to be time equals zero on that one point,
no.
It's not.
If the universe is spatially flat and infinite today, it was spatially flat and infinite at the Big Bang.
Okay.
What does that mean?
So this problem is a problem about initial conditions. You're saying, unless I postulate that the initial conditions at those two points where the photons were emitted were the same, if I don't postulate that, I have to explain why. So.
But I want not just to postulate initial conditions. I would like to have a theory in which equal temperature here and here at the time of recombination is at least in some attractive basin of some initial conditions.
But there is a question of what are natural initial conditions
Raphael.
And what are not. Sorry.
No, I was just trying to we change the terminology a little. I've always thought that it shouldn't be called a problem but a puzzle. Something is just not a problem. It's not a problem in the sense that the theory predicts something incompatible with what it is. But it leaves an unexplained feature that's very basic to the way the universe is. And the guys to explain it.
The other thing is, if you don't assume that the universe is infinite, then will this problem arise?
Yes. Because we need a theory that predicts a large enough universe. And that so even if the universe is finite, it has to be large enough to produce a universe of this size today. The problem will be there. And there'll be other problems, which I'll get to now.
The other way is to have speed of light varying the universe.
Yeah.
That also solves the problem.
We'll get to that. Let me comment on, actually, remind me to comment on that when I show you how inflation solves this. Okay, now, the second problem, or puzzle, is the flatness puzzle. So the laws of three-dimensional Euclidean geometry are quite well observed to be true on large distance scales today. So now I will be introducing spatial curvature. So if the universe is spatially flat, then this is the way that the energy density and the expansion rate are connected. But if there's curvature, then there is an extra term. And so k is the curvature constant, which is plus 1 or minus 1, or 0 if the universe is spatially flat, energy density. This is the energy density which you need to have if the universe is spatially flat. Then you can define a quantity omega, which is energy density divided by energy density in a spatially flat universe. And what you can calculate is omega minus 1 as a function of temperature. And assuming standard Big Bang cosmology, namely perfect fluids, you find that this scales as t to the minus 2. Carbon number 2, for instance. Which means that omega equals 1 in standard Big Bang cosmology is an unstable fixed point.
So what is that temperature?
So the temperature is the temperature which is related to the energy density via Boltzmann's law.
Okay.
So you can do the calculation in the radiation dominated era. So if today we know that the universe is spatially flat to a couple of percent now. And so in the early universe, the fine-tuning had to be much, much more severe. Okay. And the last problem, the third problem, is the formation of structure problem.
So what you're saying is it had to be exactly flat, or almost exactly flat.
Almost exactly.
It's not natural.
It's a natural explosion.
It's a natural explosion. I would say also homogeneity positive.
So it's a natural
explosion.
Could I look again on this point? I mean, there are people who say that George Ellis would say that if we observed omega today to be 100 million, then we'd still be the same puzzle. It's an unstable fixed point. It doesn't matter what omega is today. If you roll far back enough in time, it has to be incredibly close to 1.
So, again,
but you see, what I'm leading up to is just the fact that in inflationary cosmology, omega equals 1 becomes a scalar attractor. Becomes an attractor.
Right, okay.
But so you're certainly true that any finite value of omega is...
say that it's a puzzle of the standard Big Bang cosmology again.
No, we would like to understand why. We would like to understand why is omega almost 1 today.
Right, but what I'm saying is that if omega was a million today,
we would also like to understand that.
We would be saying, why is it a million?
Yeah,
you know, so.
That's right.
So, well.
So the.
Well, no, however big it was. There would be an early enough time where there would be an incredible fine tuning. So there would always be this question, whatever the value of omega was.
But then inflation wouldn't predict 1 million, it predicts 1, so inflation would be ruled out.
Right, but the question is this a puzzle of the standard Big Bang cosmology?
Let's
not talk about semantics here. We would like to have a theory which explains why we observe omega equals 1 within 3%.
Fine. Okay, but that is a different statement to say the standard.
That's what I mean. Well, that's what I mean by that.
That's what I mean.
So, formation of structure puzzle. We would like to have a mechanism which explains the non-random distribution of galaxies which is observed. So that's what we want. So now another space-time graph, time space. Now I plot the time of equal matter and radiation, and I will draw the horizon, the forward light. So we are sitting here today, and we now observe structure in the universe on very large scales. We actually observe anisotropies in the microwave background on scales of the order of the horizon. And these structures, if we plot their, if we plot the physical wavelength corresponding to a fixed co-moving scale, so points corresponding to peaks of a wave pinned down in the expanding Rayson bread. This is how the physical distance evolves. So this is a, imagine that you have a wave, matter wave. Its physical wavelength increases as t to the 2/3 in the matter-dominated universe. This 2/3 comes by solving this equation with p equals 0. Whereas the horizon scales as t. So you find that at equal matter and radiation, the physical wavelength corresponding to large scale structure today is larger than the horizon. So now homework problem 3 for the students. Find where I am lying to you in the following argument. The argument is as follows. large scale structure can only form by gravity because the universe is neutral with respect to all other particles. It's only gravity that's acting large scales. Gravity is an extremely weak force. So the seeds that have developed into the galaxies today had to have been non-randomly distributed at equal matter and radiation if the galaxies are non-randomly distributed today. Therefore, this simple geometry, and the lie is not in how I do this diagram, simple geometry shows that we cannot causally explain specific non-random structure at this of the seeds, which then develop into the observed non-random structure of the galaxies. So there seems to be a causality problem. Causal physics cannot explain why we should have non-random structures of a very specific.
What is non-random mean in this context?
A random distribution of galaxies would, if you measure the power spectrum, it would be a Poisson power spectrum.
So basically it means that the probability that there's a galaxy at any given point is independent from the probability that there's a galaxy at any
other point. That would be randomness.
Okay.
And galaxies, if you look at the distribution of galaxies, you see that there are sheets of galaxies, there are lines of galaxies, there are voids, very non-random structure, you can quantify that. We would like to have a theory which explains, which correctly produces this distribution. And here, there's a false no-go theorem in the context of Big Bang cosmology. Okay.
Just a minor point. Is that conformal time zone that you switched over to?
No, this is, this is a definite question. This is
impressionist. Okay, so not literally.
It is less impressionistic if you have conformal time in mind. Okay, now obviously as it's been mentioned before, there's standard Big Bang cosmology has a fundamental inconsistency. So we cannot believe what the foundations of the theory near the time when the energy density is infinite. So we cannot extrapolate to t equals 0. The theory has broken down long before we extrapolate there. Inflationary cosmology has the same inconsistency problem as standard impact cosmology. No improvement whatsoever. So, inconsistency problem. Because inflation does not improve on it. Okay, so now comes the idea of inflation. So, the idea of inflation is that we replace the timeline of standard Big Bang cosmology, where we have a Big Bang, equal matter and radiation today, the universe dominated by radiation, dominated by matter. We replace this by a new timeline where there's a zone of ignorance, and then there's a period which starts at a time which I call, the new timeline goes top, so all of you see it. We are here today. Equal matter and radiation, no change. We go way back. We postulate that there's a period in time where the scale factor evolves exponentially. H constant, some constant in this space. Period of inflation. We don't know what happens early on, but in specific models of inflation, we do know what happens early on. And there is a similarity early on. So now, this simple idea of inflation can provide partial resolutions of these three puzzles. So let me now change this diagram and show you how inflation can resolve or partially resolve the homogeneity problem. So we are making the universe slightly longer. There's a period when the universe is expanding exponentially. And there might be a radiation-dominated early phase. So now we plot the forward light cone. And obviously, if the universe is expanding exponentially in this period, the forward light cone expands exponentially as well. So, as long as you make this period of inflation long enough, you can obviously make the forward light cone at the time of recombination bigger than the past light cone. And so therefore, there is no causal obstacle to having the same temperature here and here. No causal obstacle, as opposed to an explanation. I haven't given you an explanation, but I've shown you that there's no causal obstacle. So let's go back, go to this formation structure problem. We are making the universe slightly longer, slightly older. The universe is expanding exponentially. So therefore, what we think is the horizon today is not the horizon. It's not the forward light cone. The forward light cone, as I indicated, is exponentially larger. So in inflationary cosmology, you have to be very careful when you compare H inverse, which is A over A dot, and the horizon. H inverse is called the Hubble radius. In standard Big Bang cosmology, there's no difference between Hubble radius and horizon. But in general, this is a local quantity. And if we plot this local quantity as a function of time, we find that before inflation, it is the same as the horizon. But during inflation, A is expanded exponentially. So therefore, A over A dot is constant. And what happens to fixed physical scales? The universe is expanding exponentially, so therefore the physical wavelength associated with this co-movement is expanding exponentially or decreasing exponentially as we go back to the past. So in inflationary cosmology, as long as the period of inflation is sufficiently long, scales that we observe today on orbit all the way up to the horizon, they have all started on sub-Hubble scales early during inflation. And so therefore you can imagine that there's a demon in this hot soup of the early universe, of the inflationary universe, stirring this soup. The demon can only stir the soup, if it's a causal demon, can only stir the soup on wavelengths smaller than the Hubble radius. Hubble radius, because the demon is acting at a fixed physical time, produces waves. These waves are stretched exponential, and they become the structure that we observe today. So inflation provides a resolution of the causality problem of not being able to find a mechanism to explain the structure of
the universe. So these waves must have been really, really tiny. I suppose these waves then must have been really tiny, so that
tiny in amplitude or in wavelength?
In wavelength.
Yes, and we'll get back to that.
Okay. I was going to ask if you.
Yeah, that's the Trans-Planckian.
Yeah.
I wanted to remind you of something.
Yes, you want to remind yourself. So obviously, this diagram I drew under the assumption that the speed of light here and this phase is the same. Now if the speed of light here is much smaller than this period, there's obviously another way to resolve the homogeneity problem, maybe. Speed of light is much, much larger in this phase. Oops, light going into it. So inflation is not the only way to address the homogeneity.
Could there not be some fundamental reason why the background radiation should be this temperature and there's no problem?
Yes. So I'm not claiming that, that these are the only ways.
Do you have to have an exponential?
No. All you need is acceleration. So you need, if the scale factor is a power of time, the power has to be bigger than 1. Because that's the condition, and that's called generalized inflation.
When people say that it solved the homogeneity problem, I mean, there is the idea that if the universe we see has come from inside a causal horizon, then that's okay, because causal interaction will have homogenized. But people never seem to really show that, well, that you have a model where you can show that the interactions are sufficient such that in the time, in the relevant time, thermalization actually happens.
I will show that.
You will show
that? That will come when I talk about realizations of inflation. So I've only shown that there's no obstacle. Now, since there are so many questions, something that I will not do is I will not show you how inflation addresses the lattice problem. That's another homework problem. Show that if the universe is expanding exponentially, then omega equals 1 is an attractor. That's two lines of
okay. I should be reminded that there are laws of inflation that do not give omega equals 1.
That's right, because you have not reached sufficiently close to this point.
Okay. because there was a time when observations said the rate was not equal to one. It was around 30 people. There was a flood of papers showing that we had inflation models where the rate was not equal to one.
Right. So what I
think for problem.
So the homework problem is to show that omega equals one is an attractor. Now, how close to the attractor you actually flow depends on how long inflation was. So you can already see that obviously these models that you're referring to, they play with the duration of inflation.
So if it's not an exponential, then it's generalized inflation, do I have a range of possible omegas?
No, omega, if for generalized inflation, for any model of generalized inflation, omega equals one is an attractor.
For any?
For any. But obviously, the rate at which you flow towards those attractors, towards that attractor, depends on the index.
And so, and some of those rates are now highly constrained by data.
Assuming a particular model of structural formation. Okay, so at this is the high point for inflation right now.
So before we go into that, if you don't mind, can I ask you about, again, about Flatness problems? So if I could paraphrase it in the following way, which must be wrong in some sense, but I could say flatness means k equals 0.
No, see, the flatness problem has to be formulated. You assume that k is not equal to 0. You assume that k equals plus 1 or minus 1. Because why should the early universe be spatially? Why should the initial condition be exactly spatially flat?
Well, I guess what I was going to say is that there are only three possibilities:
right.
A plus, minus one, or zero, and it happens to be zero. So where is it possible?
No. Okay. View it in a different way. Let's fix a time when the temperature of the universe is very large but finite. At that point, you have an infinite range of possible values for the radius of the space. Only one of those corresponds to spatial flatness.
But I mean, you know, maybe there's some kind of topological term in some action that means everything is inconsistent unless k equals 0.
Yes.
So
thanks for pointing that out. So, right, so maybe we have the wrong underlying theory, and the underlying theory is only consistent if k is equal zero. But inflation does provide a mechanism for making omega equals one an attractor.
During this uncomfortable pause, could you tell again what the line labeled t to the 2/3 on that diagram is?
Okay, that is the physical wave length corresponding to a fixed co-moving scale. So if you have the raisin bread, which is expanding, the raisins are at rest in the dough. This line is the physical wavelength between the raisins. And it just expands with the scale factor of the universe. The scale factor of the universe in the matter-dominated era is q to the 2/3, as you can verify.
About this k value, so plus minus 1 and 0, it sounds as if there was only one way of positive and one way of negative curvature. But of course, you can always, I mean, to get k equal plus or minus 1, you have to actually scale it probably. It's kind of a definition that you
yes,
want
so that's
to
what I
choose the scaling. So it's not that there are just three possibilities.
No, that's what I asked.
Infinitely,
that's
what I've read before.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah,
so, I mean, sometimes inflation is cited as solving other problems like, you know, topological defects. Absence of them. So, I mean, are you saying that because you don't think it really solves that problem? You don't think they're really a problem? You don't think you just didn't want to discuss it?
I haven't shown that without inflation we would have topological effects. And many inflationary models predict topological effects. In fact, I'm going to show how topological defects arise in certain inflationary models. So far, the only thing I've mentioned about inflation is this timeline. I haven't said how to get inflation. So let's now go on to, and I guess that's the last thing I'm going to do today, realizations of inflation. Okay, now let's be conservative and assume that space-time is described by Einstein gravity. So let's assume that these equations are valid. Now what we want is we want h of t to be constant. That's inflation. So therefore we need the energy density to be constant, and therefore we need pressure to be minus energy density. For generalized inflation, you need the pressure to be smaller than minus one-third rho. That's homochrome. So we need some new form of matter. Radiation and cold matter does not suffice. Now, particle physicists have the same, they will always use the same trick when they are forced to solve a problem which they don't know how to solve. And this is to introduce scalar fields. if you ask me about quintessence later on, I'll say some very extreme things. But for inflation, it's okay to introduce scalar fields.
Which we have never observed.
Because because inflation makes predictions which you can go and test. But yes, no one has ever observed a scalar field. But you know the Lagrangian of a scalar field. A scalar field is very simple compared to other fields. There is a possibility of having potential energy. And given this Lagrangian, you can calculate the energy momentum tensor. Follows from the Lagrangian. And that gives you the expressions for the pressure and for the energy density. And the energy density has three terms. Kinetic energy, tension energy, and potential energy. That, I think, you should all immediately believe. And the pressure, that you have to calculate. And you find that the kinetic energy alone gives pressure equals to plus energy density, but the potential energy gives you the right equation of state to give you inflation. This is equation of state. This can be parameterized by some constant or some function W. So therefore, if we want to get inflation, we can postulate that there is a scalar field, and the initial conditions for the scalar field are such that the potential energy dominates over the tension and dominates over the kinetic energy. So scalar field alone is not enough to get inflation. There are many models of inflation, old inflation, which was known to be wrong from the beginning. So Guth's initial paper on inflation and cosmology proposed old inflation, and Guth realized in that paper that was fatally flawed. Later on, new inflation was proposed. And it was immediately realized that new inflation was faintly flawed. At least it was immediately realized by the cosmologists in the former Soviet Union, Andrei Linder. And it was also immediately realized by general relativists in North America that new inflation was faintly flawed. I refer to a paper by Mazenko Waldemumu, 1983 as well. But in textbooks on cosmology written up to 1990 in the Western world, new inflation was portrayed as this paradigm, and chaotic inflation was kind of this weird other model. And what happened in 1990?
The Linde book came out.
No.
The Linde book came out.
No.
No.
What happened in 1990 is that Andrei Linde moved from the Soviet Union. And the cosmologists in North America could no longer say that they could no longer neglect chaotic inflation, the problems of inflation. So, it's hybrid inflation. So, no model has.
Nope. So let me illustrate calculation. I would start 1979 with Robert Gauss and others, who actually won the prize of the Gravity Foundation. Nobody mentions them.
Okay.
Robert Gauss in the 1960s, this Russian guy.
Yeah.
But it look in the paper, it's on there.
Sarah Bishke
was 1960s.
Sarah Bishke was 1970s.
But that was Wolf and Gravity.
That
was modified
by
this guy's name, I forget, in the mid-60s, the Russian.
Okay, so
if you deserve this credit.
The scenario of chaotic inflation is you take a new scalar field, which is not the Higgs field, it's an extra scalar field that you have to add to the theory, and you can take a very simple potential, for example, m squared phi squared.
Are you going to comment on what flows these rules, and even if you don't describe them? So.
Yeah, let me just reverse the order.
Mm-hmm.
First describe chaotic inflation. So, I now work in Planck units. So you assume that the scalar field starts out. We're talking about a hot initial universe. So there's absolutely no reason for the scalar field to be localized at its minimum. It should not be there. It has energy. So therefore, it's typically at a large value. And if you imagine starting out the classical description at Planck temperature, then you would expect the scalar field to lie at the value where the potential energy density is given by Planck energy density. So it gives you a value, which is m Planck divided by m times m. So generically, the scalar field will start out at a value much bigger than m Planck if we demand that its initial energy, potential energy, be given by Planck energy density. And it will evolve according to its equation of motion. And this is the Klein-Gordon equation in a Friedman-Robertson-Walker universe. Another problem derived is equation of motion.
So does it make sense to apply a classical equation of motion to a field that has this energy at a Planck scale?
Well, so if you want replace this by the scale you want to describe, you want to start the classical description. As you lower that scale, you will lower this value.
Yeah.
And if you demand, if you are too conservative, then you will make it impossible to get inflation. And maybe you should be too conservative. So. So now, this equation obviously neglects spatial gradients.
Mm.
So this equation is only true if the scalar field is homogeneous.
Mm-hmm.
Why should the scalar field start out homogeneous? This is not a problem for chaotic inflation. Because even if initially the gradient energy dominates, the universe will still be expanded. It won't be expanded exponentially. The gradients will redshift. Therefore, as long as there's some potential energy, some mode, zero mode left, that will eventually dominate. Chaotic inflation is an attractor in initial condition space, whereas new inflation is an unstable fixed point in initial condition space. So that's the problem for new inflation.
Could you, I don't know much about the Higgs mechanism, but could you say something why this isn't, can't be the Higgs field?
But I haven't said anything. Now, you want the scalar field to have negligible kinetic energy as well. So therefore, the potential has to be very flat. Because otherwise, even if you started with zero kinetic energy, it will rapidly gain kinetic energy. So what you want is slow rolling. And the slow rolling condition itself is sufficient to kill the Higgs field. Because we know the gauge coupling constants. And by naturalness, the gauge coupling constants are related to the coupling constants in the potential. You cannot have a Higgs field with unknown gauge coupling constants be very flat.
Would you be able to dumb this down for those of us who don't have a background in particle physics?
Yes.
Let's do that privately because... So one thing which you should understand is that if the potential is steep, then you won't get inflation. Because then this term will dominate over this term. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I'm following the equations. I just read along with the question. But you said that you want the field phi to be homogeneous.
Right.
So its value everywhere in space is...
Okay, but then I said that,
is that
chaotic inflation is an attractor in initial condition space. So if the field is not homogeneous initially, as long as there is a component with a large amplitude, which is homogeneous. So you take the initial field configuration, which is inhomogeneous, you Fourier transform. As long as there is a zero mode with a large amplitude, that will eventually dominate. Because the other components will redshift away.
What requires that to be true?
What requires?
How do you know there's a mode remains? That's a function.
No, it's fine-tuning to have no zero mode at all. Because that means perfect correlations over super-hot scales.
Because there is this idea of both the starting inflation and we have pocket universe. So one of those pocket universes, there is one of those.
I'm not talking about pocket universes here. That's, you and I already are stochastic, thinking about stochastic terms. There are no stochastic.
So if it's not a scalar field, do things not work, or is it just that that's too complicated?
So,
people don't
so if you see, if you stick to the conservative framework of renormalizable field theories for fermions and for gauge fields, you don't have potential energy terms. So you don't have terms in the bare Lagrangian, which give you the equation of state p equals minus 1.
But phi could be a composite.
Now, phi could be a composite. But if phi is a composite, then you expect large coupling constants, and therefore you expect not to get slow rolling.
You could have like multiple, there's all sorts of things you could make. You could have multiple fields that don't necessarily form a composite, but still interact, and could therefore have something that looks kind of like potential. It's just people don't look at these because they're too complicated, or is there some more fundamental reason why they don't work?
No, as long as you can construct something that looks like a potential, then you're okay. But I think most ways of getting a condensate without a fundamental scalar field will generically give you large coupling constants. That would be my prejudice. But now I'm talking about just the prejudice. Others may, you may correct me.
You're probably right. Start with fermions, you want to get a
But just this is a, I want to show you an existence proof of getting a model of inflation. And this is my existence proof.
But,
what?
We're talking about an effective low energy theory, right? So you don't necessarily expect it to be renormalizable.
Yes, that's right. So so therefore you you might be able to construct models of inflation by making use of that. So see, the bottom line right now is that we have no model of inflation that is free of problems, because if you take this a model with a scalar field like this, and you try to embed it in supergravity, then supergravity corrections would never, would generically give you a steep potential as soon as the field values become bigger than M plumb. So chaotic inflation is not free of problems either.
So what happens if the potential, even if...
Actually, sorry, this...
I just want to nail something down completely. When you say slow rolling, you say V prime of phi, slope of the potential, has to be very, very flat. Is that right?
The condition is that this has to be true. And
but phi I also
mean to V prime. Phi double dot has to be smaller than 3 H phi dot. These are the two slow roll conditions. Now, they are very different, so that's what is meant in the literature by slow roll conditions. This is necessary to get inflation. This is not necessary to get inflation, but this is necessary to make calculations easy. So this you can forget about.
Yeah, that second one clearly, yeah, okay, I can see that. Right. But I'm just saying, what is the relation to the shape of the potential itself? I mean, just naively, the steeper the potential is, the larger phi dot is.
That's right.
Okay, so that first condition, that phi dot squared is less than V of phi, ultimately is a condition on V prime of phi. Okay,
right.
That V prime of phi has to be bounded in some way.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. So this gives a condition on V prime and not a condition on V alone.
Okay.
So if you take a potential, you can lift it up and down. If you keep it shape the same, that's cosmological constant problem.
Now, independent of whether we like fermions in the picture or gauge fields in the picture, there are fermions and there are gauge fields. Mm-hmm. So they even existed at that time. And one can ask, what else were they doing at the time? And I suppose that this first line equation has to be generalized and say that they may all be contributing, trying to make omega larger than minus one, but you still have to have their kinetic terms not to, in their sum, not to influence, not to dominate over the potential.
So let me end with this timeline in inflationary cosmology. Here I've got energy density, and here I have... So I start with a universe dominated by radiation. And by this radiation, I mean the fermions, which we discussed, and all the other fields that we have. And then we have a scalar field, which has a zero mode, which is excited. So, the universe is expanding, the energy density in all of these fermions will redshift, eventually the zero mode will rear its head, the energy density in radiation will decrease, and we will get inflation forever. And unless something happens to turn to end inflation. So you see that, so in the context of this scalar field model, you predict that the universe is initially dominated by all the matter that we have in the standard model. The universe is dominated by matter in gauge fields, in fermions. Therefore, there is an initial singularity, because the Penrose-Hawking theorem applied. There is a t equals zero. So in scalar field-driven models of inflation, there is an initial radiation-dominated period. there is an initial singularity, there is a singularity problem, inflation starts, does all its good things. So what I'll start the next lecture with is to explain how you create not an empty universe at the end, but a universe which again has lots of ordinary mass, which is a relief. So far I've only discussed the answer.
Why doesn't the zero one exist forever? It doesn't evolve according to ways.
Yes. So it will evolve, and eventually this good. So let's take this particular model, m squared phi squared. Let's solve the equation of motion under the slow roll approximation. We have phi dot equals minus 1 over 3h, m squared phi. H is given by the Friedman equation. By the energy density. The energy density is potential energy. So H is proportional to phi. Therefore phi dot is a constant, and the value of this constant is proportional to m square. M times m prime. So now, phi dot is constant, so therefore phi double dot, the slow rolling approximation is self-consistent, but you find that as phi rolls down the potential, eventually the kinetic energy will dominate, and the kinetic energy will dominate precisely when phi becomes of the order of m prime. So this is the region of inflation. And here, you will actually have the region of oscillation. So you'll have scalar field matter with an equation of state p is equal to zero, time average. And what I'll have to show now, next, is how do you turn this into energy density of ordinary matter that we see today?
It's a kinetic energy that we need.
Yeah, but you'll be oscillating back and forth.
Okay.
So you have both kinetic and potential energy. And it will average to p equals zero.
Did you say if I has to exceed m prime for the inflation?
Yes. And that's not specific to m squared phi squared. That's general for line phi to the fourth as well. Single field models of inflation.
But exactly at that point, I was wondering, you agreed before that the Lagrangian, you wrote down some of the Lagrangian of an effective low energy theory.
Yeah.
But this cannot be really the viewpoint of cosmologists, right? Because then you would introduce a new scale, an energy scale, below which this Lagrangian describes physics correctly. But introducing such a scale doesn't give you a clean Cauchy initial value formula. Because this,
you can set an initial time. When you say that the
this cutoff will be a cutoff on an energy scale, right? You will say if something's below or above m Planck, I have to use that or that zero.
Right.
But in general relativity, such a condition will mix you energy, momentum, and coordinates. This is not a clean Cauchy hypersurface.
Okay. We have to talk about that, so I have to pass on that question.
I just wanted to stress the point that the flatness of the potential forces V to look like a vacuum energy.
I'll get to that.
Your vacuum energy dominates.
Okay.
You have a cosmic energy constant.
Right. Since you raised these problems, it was really good that there were lots of questions, but as a consequence, I didn't get as far as I had hoped. I actually wanted to get to the problems of inflation, but let me mention, since you raised this question, I'll also mention the Achilles heel of inflation. Who's not heard of the cosmological constant problem? you've all heard of the cosmological constant term. The potential energy, a constant potential energy acts like a cosmological constant. And it's the potential energy which is driving inflation. We know that we don't understand the vacuum energy. The quantum vacuum energy is not understood. We know that it's not gravity. There's some unknown mechanism which renders quantum vacuum energy gravitationally ineffective. Pauli already knew that. How do we know that this V of phi that is acting like quantum vacuum energy is not made ineffective by the same mechanism which is makes quantum vacuum energy gravitationally ineffective? So it's really the Achilles heel of inflation. So inflation is precisely driven by the thing that we do not understand. So if I would have completed what I had planned to do today, I would have completed with this sentence. But let's keep the questions.
So, is it,